How many people enjoyed that? Yeah? Oh, okay. Well, we have a cultured group here. There are a lot of things that he said that I disagree with, starting with the fact that he says, Klosowski and Smith, that the affects create the phantasm. No, I think the phantasm create your affects. And what I think the phantasm is, and which, remember, he also called the essence. At the essence level, that's where the phantasm or the image is still in its archetypal purity. And you're trying to manifest your archetypal form in life. But when it goes down into the ego level, it gets corrupted. And that's when it turns into a fantasy that produces all the kinds of dysfunctional relationality in one's life and the manic depressive oscillation, etc. But it's that essence of our true nature that one is trying to grasp and manifest and bring to life through one's encounter with the depth of one's being that is always what is at stake in any life. That is the ultimate cause and motivation of the various paths that one takes in one's existence. So that, I would say, is first. Another point is at the end he says, which is it? Was it absolute language or absolute muteness? Well, it's not an either or, it's both. It is that the silence creates the openness to the absolute language. Ramana says that all the time, right? Silence is the eloquence of God. You hear that word of God in the silence. So it's not one or the other. And there are many ways in which they have not yet fully parsed out the difference between the levels of the subconscious within the ego, in which the phantasm is always being filtered by the sensor and the superego demands, versus the congruence of the drives toward the essence in the soul, and then the absolute real that is attained once silence is established and there's a transcendence of the I thought. Remember, that's the phantasm of ego identity that has to be let go of in order to enter into the infinite consciousness in which the Word of God speaks through one. And that is the silence that is liberation, the ecstasy of cosmic consciousness, and the creative power to dream a new world, because all the world is the expression of that phantasm, not the phantasm of the ego, but God's phantasm, God's essential thought that is the creation of the kingdom of heaven. And once we are in attunement with that thought, it manifests as a world. Okay, floor is open. Please tell me how you were impacted by this or anything you'd like to contribute.
Mm-hmm. Namaste. Thank you, namaste. This was a lot of information. It was very fast, and I know that it's all purposeful.
It's all for a good reason. I have perhaps some basic questions just to set a healthy foundation. Can you please speak about the drives? He spoke about them, but he's also mixing up Nietzsche and Klosowski, and I think I see more truth in Nietzsche and even more with what you have to say. So I'm wondering if the drives that he's talking about and the drives that you spoke about in meditation and right before this program began, you said discover which drives you're battling with, and then you said something else about the soul's drives. Is this also in alliance with the seven drives and the Kundalini map?
Yes, each chakra represents a drive. But then you have the upper and lower death drives, which are the core drives that will determine whether you rise to higher levels, higher drives within your life, or lower ones. You could get stuck at chakra one or chakra two or chakra three, right, and never reach the higher drives. But if your upper death drive and your epistemological drive, as Klein called it, will open up, you want knowledge, You want truth. You want love. You want beauty. You want joy. And then your drives rise above the ego, and then you discover the soul level, in which the drives all focus upon the attainment of the ultimate essential power, the intensity of God consciousness, that absolute intensity, which then which is without intention, but which gives rise to a world filled with intentions, because that intensity is infinite and absolute.
I think I was getting confused because he was speaking of different drives in the program. He spoke of three or four of them. He was, and it kind of leads to my next question, but he was speaking about the impulses and intensities, the phantasms and the simulacrum, and then
yes, he was speaking of the ego level of drives. But still, you can say that they are a sex drive, a drive for power, a drive for security, a drive for particular kinds of phenomenal plane objects that one has projected goodness on, or some sense of wholeness or completion. So the drive is always based on the phantasm. Okay.
But there's also soul drive in there, yeah?
Well, the soul drive at that level, it takes a different form, because there it is in its more pure nature. It's not projected on a person or an object of some kind. The soul wants goodness, love, beauty, perfection in its purity, not in a projected form.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. Can you also speak about the word simulacrum, and what you mean when you use it? Because I heard the measure of the invisible power known to God as one of them explained in there, and that is very nice, but I don't want to mix things up again.
Well, a simulacrum is like a simulation. The whole world is a simulacrum of God, you could say. Within that, a work of art is a simulacrum. It's an attempt to recreate the feelings that one has that are incommunicable in one's heart to someone else, either by putting it in a poem or a piece of music or in a play or in whatever form, a painting that you cannot express otherwise. But that painting or that music will only be a simulacrum. It's not the real thing. Mm-hmm. It can trigger it. If you're a great artist, you can put enough of the signifiers of the real that you're feeling into it so that it is communicated. But that's a very rare thing. So only great artists are able to produce simulacra that trigger a replication of that same state of exaltation and ecstasy in another.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Anyone else? No? Okay. Oh, they want you to take the mic.
Thank you. So what did I get out of this? Perhaps that he was really speaking about how the world is our projection, mm-hmm. and from the ego it's the projection of the subconscious. Mm-hmm. And there was something that he said that it's the problem. It's not the problem of the other, but it's the problem of the same, mm-hmm. which I thought was how at least I have come to understand that there is no problem outside yourself.
That's right.
And so it's all that projection. I appreciated that very much. Understanding in the West philosophically of certainly what the Vedas, Sri Raman was talking about with the Ekajiva Vada, right? Mm-hmm. And but they don't go into the Ajata, as you said, yeah. right? But I appreciated that. And then in terms of God's phantasm you're speaking about, and how it goes from the from God's phantasm, it comes down as archetypal phantasms, and as the essence of the archetype. And then when it falls into ego, it mm-hmm. becomes perversed. Mm-hmm. So, for example, it came to mind how in this labyrinth, mm-hmm. right, in that journey of hitting the perverse state of the ego mm-hmm. and the journey to be out of that state, that all those obstacles in the labyrinth, aren't they then what is utterly necessary in order to regain the aha, the essence of the archetype, such as the Ganesha, mm-hmm. right? In which mm-hmm. the archetype now at the level that's no mm-hmm. longer of the perverse ego who wants to be the savior or the victim or mm-hmm. the persecutor, mm-hmm. but is able to remove all those mm-hmm. obstacles of the ego's perversions and mm-hmm. the projections, and recognize, oh, it's the archetype after all, mm-hmm. and it's that revelation, that concealment, mm-hmm. and then the revelation process. Mm-hmm. So I thought many things came up, but these were two mm-hmm. that I could relate to mm-hmm. in our teachings here, and also my own journey, mm-hmm. and now my work with others, in which mm-hmm. I had a number of these situations come up today.
Yes, and indeed, the Ganesha drive is essential for an Atmanologist. If you want to dispel the obstacles of the other, then that drive and the essence of understanding of what the obstacle really is important. And this is why he was also, I would say, inaccurate by talking about the problem of the same. The problem is when the same is mistaken for the other, that you see the world in duality rather than non-duality. Satan actually is God. It's not just a simulation. It's just the other end of the spectrum. The dark and the light are one, which is why you go beyond good and evil, which is one of the names of one of his books, one of Nietzsche's books. So it is that beyond of the judging of the opposites of good and bad that Adam and Eve ate of the tree of knowledge of that brought the fall. When we go beyond that duality and unify it all, then we realize everything is perfect. There was never a problem at all. Right, but we have to go through a lot of problems in order to get to that final resolution. So yes, indeed.
Yeah. One more observation to bring up, and that is reference to the body. Mm-hmm. And so I was wondering if he's referring to all the somatizations, right, that we project onto the body. Mm-hmm. And was Nietzsche saying that this is where we'll discover? Okay, even it'll be strongerly known through the symptoms in yes. the body than yes. to try to reason them yes. out, mm-hmm. yeah, because they're so much more powerful.
And that the ego in this last phase of Kali Yuga is such a concrete thinker. It concretizes everything, and it puts the suffering into the body because it can't get it. It can't think it out directly. It has to feel the suffering, and it has to be so bad that it gets its attention, because otherwise the sensor will run away from it. It won't face it. So it has to get so bad that it's life-threatening and you have to face it. And then you realize that your suffering is the greatest blessing that ever happened to you and can lead to liberation. But it's only through suffering that people are willing to awaken, which is why the world is in the situation that it's now in. Okay, thank you. Parvati. Just throw it at her.
Who?
Thank you. Just because you've been using the word a few times, can you explain what's meant by Nietzsche's delirium that he went through that they were referring to?
Well, I think everyone has to go through a certain delirium which means you realize that you don't know anything, that everything you've been taught are lies, and that the world isn't what it looks like. We just saw that about germ theory, right? But you could multiply that a thousandfold. The whole thing is a grand deception. And the more that you realize that, the more you feel you're going mad. And you enter into a situation where you saw in this video, Nietzsche stopped believing his brain. He stopped trusting that. But it's actually your thoughts. You don't trust your thoughts anymore. And so you have to let go of all beliefs to discover what is real. But in the course of that, you're going to go into a state of madness. And a state in which you are totally detached from any symbolic logic or any structure of reality, because you see through it that it's all false, it's all a simulation. And you have to go through that. That's part of what the dark night of the soul is, in which everything becomes a lie. And you go into the cloud of unknowing, and when you come out the other side, you see the truth that the mind of the ego cannot possibly grok, because it's a non-dual reality, and duality itself is delirium. Logic is delirium. Normality is delirium. And the real is so far beyond it that it looks like madness to anyone who's in the ego. But that delirium is the portal to a higher wisdom that cannot be understood or even conceived of by a mind that's still trapped in language. Okay?
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your introduction. It was very... I don't know how I would have done without it, watching this. It was very useful. I have a couple questions. One of them is, you said he rediscovered the insights of Taoism. Mm-hmm. In the sense that he had them before, or he rediscovered them in terms of...
No, he stumbled across the same truths. I don't think he ever knew Taoist texts, as far as I know. But he discovered the Wu Wei. He discovered... perspectivism, right? That's Zhuangzi's philosophy, really. He you could say, replicated it without knowing that it already existed.
There was a point, I don't remember exactly where it was in the intro or the talk, but that I think, I don't remember, but very inspiring about him being able to get the most out of his sickness by wanting to learn from it, and that using his own life as an experiment, and even if he was, you know, crippled during the migraines and stuff like that, there was still lucid moments, and I thought that was really inspiring. But his paradigm, clearly, you said it was based in the body, or at least... there was that understand or that part of the belief in the material body as what's ultimately real, or not ultimately.
Well,
but
most people believe their body is more real than their mind,
right?
And they're more obsessed with their body and its looks, etc., than they are with their condition of their soul. So I think he was expressing a truth at the ego level.
But I guess, I mean, he transcended that. And so what would you say is the key? It's the desire to learn, like this.
Yeah, he had a drive. His drive for knowledge, for truth, mm-hmm. overcame through understanding the symptoms that kept him in body consciousness. And then finally he could let go of the mind as well, the I thought, and realize the self.
Okay, I've got one more question. I felt this whole description of these different terms that were coming up and that were being explained was very useful, though it was confusing between the ego and the soul level and the kind of the levels that we talk about here. And I think you clarified just at the opening of this discussion. But I still love this idea of of this phantasm of the obsessional image, and this it's incommunicable, it's unintelligible, and one obsesses over it, and the ego feels that it doesn't want to know what's going on, it doesn't want to know what's driving it. It feels totally obsessed with these images that it, you know, this the signifieds, let's say, and the signifiers. But when he was talking about the agitation of the soul and this idea, and in conjunction with what you were saying about like the simulacrum or simulacra being in a way a sublimation and putting into art this yearning and this desire to know, I felt like at the end he was expressing that the ego version of it, or the capitalist version, or the fallen version of the, like, going with the gregarious herd mentality was through, like, capitalism, or through, I don't remember exactly how he was explaining.
Commercial art.
I was curious if you could explain a little bit this process in the ego and the process in the soul, like the because I think they're both, it's happening in both levels in a way. Like, the what is the simulacra of the ego? It's just acting out. It's just jouissance. It doesn't really have, because it doesn't. It needs to somehow express what's happening, but it's not a yearning to.
No, well, he was talking about the gregarious drives, right? So it means you want to be part of the herd. Mm-hmm. So if everyone in the herd is getting vaccinated, you sign up and you get jabbed. You don't think about it anymore. You're doing what is right according to the collective consciousness. Mm-hmm. So it's a shallow stupidity. He used that word. So that the basic phantasm is, I want to be stupid to fit in, okay? Mm-hmm. And that's why people are enslaved, because they agree to dumb themselves down in order to be liked and get more popular hits than they would if they were too smart.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I think there's more, but I'll stew on them for a little bit. Thank you.
All right. By the way, one other disagreement I had with him. In the end, he said that Nietzsche realized that all the names of history referred to him. They were all aspects of him, not the name of the Father. But that is the Father. The Father is that infinity of names. All the names of Allah, all the names are the aspects of reality. You remember Adam was given all the names of the animals and of nature. So the Father is the one name that contains all the names. It's not an either or again. And it is that return to the absolute intensification of the realization of truth as a single point of light that contains the entire cosmos from beginning to end, that allows the singularity, and he used that phrase a lot, the ultimate singularity, not just the uniqueness of an ego or a soul, but the singularity of God consciousness, to again emerge and wash away the simulacrum of a world that has fallen into degradation. Okay. Anyone else? There's one. Nicolette, you want to throw her the mic?
Namaste. My head is in scrambled eggs. I'm enjoying this chewing on all the concepts. I'll share with you what stood out to me. I loved this analogy of music and the tonality, like the staccato, and it reminded me of your chapter and Gems of Wisdom and this whole symphony of the ups and downs of it all. I loved this notion of the multiplicity of drives in one person, because I guess it's like you think you're an individual looking at a multiple of others, and then it's like, no, like you are the multiplicity within yourself, and then there's, you know, everyone else in it. Yeah, of course there's going to be a conflict when you're in that ego state. And I love this part where you said that our impulses or our drives, we choose which one we push away depending on whichever one is heightened in the moment. Like, mm-hmm. And we have no say over which one's heightened. It's just, you know, mm-hmm. that example of someone offends you and then someone laughs about it or someone cries. Like, it was whatever heightened in the moment. I was left trying to decode, like, what was the subconscious, what was the ego, what was the superego, and what just kept coming to me when he kept saying phantasm was that this is the ego, like, that he's speaking of. Mm-hmm. And this point to express something new from something that is old reminded me of this like rupture in antimatter versus matter, and that you just keep like, there's like a lurking there, just like something bad is going to happen, like you anticipating when you're in that like phantasm state, like it just kind of was like a cycle that yeah, in fact the whole lecture was a cycle, like the anyway. I have a question, but I'll get to that later.
And Nietzsche's phantasm was that of the cycle, the eternal return. Mm. So he saw the entire cycle of time and knew that he would have to repeat this moment an infinite number of times, so he better do it good so that he didn't have to suffer over doing something stupid again and again and again. So it's very sobering to have that understanding of the cycle and the need to get out of it. And let me respond to your other point. At the ego level, you are just a multiplicity of drives, and there is no control over them. You don't even know what they are because the sensor keeps you from even knowing. And what he didn't get is that there is a censoring agency that will decide which drive will be dominant in any given moment. And the conscious mind, though, has no control, none whatsoever. That's why you want to become soul conscious, because there at least the drives are all toward getting the multiplicity unified into one single whole consciousness. And that is achieved at the level of the Atman. So the soul is the lens that, like a magnifying glass, brings all the drives to focus on the one point, the zero point, in which you are finally a unified being, and you are unified as God consciousness.
I think that answers the question I was going to ask, was he mentioned like there was this impulse, or the highest, the affirmative affect that, mm-hmm. that is fulfilled by the soul, and I left dot, dot, dot by art. Mm-hmm. But you're saying that mm-hmm. that affect mm-hmm. is when you're in the soul to get up to God.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. And art is one of the three sublimation drives, right? We have the aesthetic and the ethical and the religious. All of them really are forms of art, because religion also is an art, and religion is inspired by art, and ethics is the art of living. So it is art that then takes you from 3.5 into the soul and love and wisdom, and then into the highest state.
For Nietzsche, though, it was his philosophies that did that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, philosophy, again, is the art of thinking and putting the drives all together into a drive for truth that then frees you.
Okay.
All right.
I'm going to scramble my eggs a little longer, but come up with more questions. But thank you.
Right, thanks. Thank you. There's one, Purush.
Thank you, Shunya. Thank you for giving us that recap at the beginning to contextualize all of this. I have a question and a couple of points too. The question is it possible to give like a brief summary of how Nietzsche went from this paradigm of everything comes from the body, it's all a result of that, and broke through all of that? Because that's what I'm understanding from you and from this speaker, is that he was able to break through that into the transcendent.
Well, you know, paradoxically, he did it through his migraines, which made him unable to think. And that's what brought him into silence. So his form of meditation was migraination. And in that realization, he transcended the body-identified mind, the ego, right, the I thought. And in that silence, he recognized that he wasn't a body at all. He was just pure spirit. And that's when he transcended. And it's in Thus Spoke Zarathustra. If you read that book of his, it kind of depicts as a simulacrum that journey in metaphorical terms.
Okay. Thank you. And then just a few points that stood out that I wanted to bring up again. This gave me a pretty good chuckle about the conscious mind and the imaginary. He said, the worst part of thinking is what arises to consciousness via words and signs of communication, mm-hmm. which was really interesting because it I don't know what it evoked in me is this recognition of thinking going on at multiple levels. You become aware of this little sliver of it, and then you try and then there's the colonization aspect, which makes you want to translate that into some sort of discourse that then you can feel proud about yourself for or something. Mm-hmm. And yeah, the other one, this is also sort of a question. I don't know if I wrote it down right, but what I wrote down was the philosopher is the occasion of the impulse. Mm-hmm. And I was curious, is this to be understood as like archetype, impulse in that sense?
Yeah, I think he means the occasion of the upper death drive, mm-hmm. that particular impulse, right? The ego mind doesn't have that impulse in itself. And so it'll oscillate between small talk and master's discourse, but it doesn't have any real interest in truth that transcends the ego. So the narcissistic bubble stops the boundary of thought from going into the beyond, but the philosopher is in a way the drive that pops the bubble that then occasions the descent of true knowledge, jnana.
Because what it makes me think of is like these free-floating ideas or archetypes or something that then come to possess an individual.
Yeah, and that's grace, especially if it's God's idea and then you're possessed by it, then you're taken up into that the ether of the mind of God, and then the ego is gone. And a whole new life begins. So that's why it's always called rebirth, right? You've got to go through death and rebirth. The philosopher is one who has the love of wisdom, right? Philosophia, that is able to make that leap into the unknown that brings one into God. Okay.
Thank you. Yeah, it was a really good exercise tonight to stay focused. Thanks.
I just have one more question.
Go ahead.
No, it's probably a silly question, but I was just wondering, is the migraine also like a gift of grace from God? Like many teachers like Ram Dass and Thich Nhat Hanh and people who have strokes towards the end of their life, and is it a similar kind of thing where the mind is just struck silent?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Everything is ultimately grace and a blessing, but in particular for Nietzsche, that's what drove him to have to discover what was behind it all, so that he could bear his life and his suffering, and it led to his liberation. But it's always what suffering is for. Okay.
Yeah. Shunya, I was thinking at the introduction about this idea of no intention versus purity of intention. What's the difference between having no intention and let's say the highest or the purest intention?
Well, purity of intention is to be one with God, and then you are without intention. So it's the step before being without intention. Mm-hmm. As long as there's still an individual self separate from the one self, then the intention has to be unified. Mm-hmm. And so the purity of intention is always surrender to God. And then the realization of God consciousness is completely without intention. But the will of God operates, but there's no intention of an individual. So God's intention is there. And this is why it's very important to understand that, going back to what he talked about in the phantasm of love and of basically all of the motivating forces, that's Shakti. You see, and this is where Kashmir Shaivism differs from Advaita Vedanta, which does not have a concept of that will, but that's what Shakti is. It's the will that activates the creation of the simulacrum and the production of God consciousness in an avataric form in the world, and produces the actual revolution of history that will bring us back to another golden age. And if it weren't for the presence of that Shakti that is underlying all of our deepest yearnings, that we would not, life would be meaningless. We would be robots. And that's what's happening now at the end of Kali Yuga. Life has become meaningless for most people. They're totally cut off from Shakti. They have no will to transcend or to understand even or to become free. And now that Shakti is moving again into the world, into those who have chosen to be instruments and have surrendered with that purity of intention, and they're receiving the intensity of God consciousness that will transform this hologram. Okay. Anyone else? Kin.
Thank you, Shunya. This was quite revelatory. I've always been interested in Nietzsche and quite a fan of his, even though I discovered that I actually knew really little about him. His concept of slave morality was something that I learned, which was very interesting. Kind of how that's formed as a kind of resentment towards the elite or towards powerful beings, let's say. I thought for some time that he was a nihilist and that that's why he went mute. And so I believed the whole story of him having gone mad, and I never really understood it because he had very bright ideas. And so this clarified a lot of that, and I'm grateful now to sort of switch that picture of from Nietzsche as a lunatic to Nietzsche as a sage, actually.
Yeah.
Good. And there were a couple of, well, two points that I wanted to mention. The one was where he mentioned that what is needed is practice seeing with other eyes and to practice objectiveness. Mm-hmm. And that struck home because I see in that he also talked about the errors and the fallacies of the ego. And I see how so often I get trapped in those errors, in reacting in certain ways that comes from an impulse. When that's really not needed and it's totally not objective. And at the same time, trying to always, let's say, be in absence and try to see from a space of absence. So that was a nice point. And the main thing was this idea of Satan as the double of God, which... at first, I didn't understand what he was talking about, but then I saw, okay. So often, I'll have a drive or an impulse come up, and then I'll think, okay, this is good, you know, to listen to some music or to watch something on the internet or to even something like taking a walk or something like that. And I think, okay, this is good. This will feed me in some way. This will make me feel good in some sense. And not always, but sometimes I notice that it's not necessarily something that came from the self, but something that came from a force that in the end makes me feel more drained. And, just the whole thing with the vaccine that you've been talking about a lot and this sort of it being a good thing, well, that's what people say and it's all for each other's protection, but in the end it's really harmful and satanic. So that was really interesting and... I don't know, maybe if you could speak more about discerning between that and also, I guess, finding the right antithesis to those theses of the ego. And I think it has to do with the soul recognizing it and saying no. But those were the main things that came up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, at the ego level, as he said, there's just a multiplicity of drives. And as long as the impulse comes from mental chatter, I suddenly want this or that, I'll go to the cookie jar or I'll go to this website that I know I shouldn't go to and will drain me, etc. All of those are entirely within the ego. They have nothing to do with the soul. The soul makes its appearance in the form of abstinence and asceticism. It's not even just a saying no, but a saying yes to the discovery of a higher level of one's being than would manifest through the jouissance of the body. And so it will take you into another vibrational frequency where you will appreciate the much more subtle joys of the presence of love and wisdom and all of the hidden understanding of what is really happening from behind the scrim, the veil of Maya, and the X-ray vision that comes through the opening of that third eye is compensates for everything you have to let go of in order to open that eye. And that's when life becomes interesting.
That's helpful. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Okay, I think we'll stop here because it's getting late, and we'll call a night to this discussion. But how many people would like to see this kind of lecture again, this level of intelligence? Yeah, okay. Because I thought he was very clear, very lucid, very logical and to the point. And I think he is an example of excellent scholarship and dedication to truth. So I appreciate when I find talks that are of that level of purity of intention and accuracy of understanding. So I'll be glad to share them with you as I discover more of them. So thank you all, and blessings on overcoming all the lower drives and unifying your consciousness in the drive for liberation and the achievement of that, knowing that the drive is coming from the liberated self that you already are. And there is not a question of having to be driven to God, but God is driving you back to your own original nature. And all you have to do is to surrender and let the force carry you into the light. May you all choose to do that. Namaste.
Namaste.